Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have got a lot of venom to spit. It is not a good time to be a Chicago sports fan. But let's quickly talk about our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season is starting just in a couple of short weeks, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, do you mind if I kick this off?
Go right ahead.
We are in a situation with the Chicago Bears where we don't know if our quarterback is the right quarterback, the quarterback of the future, the quarterback, the long-term answer for this team. We have to make, in a couple of months, we're going to have to make a decision on whether we pick up his fifth-year option and pay him $25 million for one season. We're at the very end of the rookie cap or the rookie salary of this quarterback that we're supposed to use as a template of you get the young quarterback, you build a team around him, you spend on your defense, and you get good years before you have to pay your quarterback. We're at the very tail end of that. And we can't even put a goddamn coaching staff into play that knows what they're doing. And we're not going to know. The end of this season is going to come. We have to be able to, we have to fire our coaching staff. They have to be gone. And probably your general manager too, is the whole lot of them. You're going to have to fire them. And you are no closer to knowing if Justin Fields the guy, and you're very likely going to have the number one overall pick and have to make a decision on Caleb Williams without number one, knowing if Justin Fields could have been the guy, and two, without maximizing the trade value you have in the guy. This has been an epic failure, just monumental. And I keep backtracking. You know what? This guy's not playing well, and this quarterback's not playing well, and the offensive linemen, each individually, are not playing well. Okay, well, then the coaches aren't coaching well. Well, you know what? The general manager had $100 million and the number one overall pick and didn't build an offensive line or a defensive line, even though he's talked us about the importance of building from the inside out. And he also put this coaching staff into place. And then I backed up even more, and I was like, you know what? This is another failure by George McCaskey. It all goes back to the McCaskey family, period. They're incompetent. This whole franchise is just a complete and utter shit show. From the very top, I don't doubt that the McCaskeys love the Bears. I don't doubt that they want them to win. They're just too stupid and incompetent to make it happen. They should sell the team to somebody that knows how to do it and just step back and watch his fans and buy a ticket like everybody else. This has been a failure. Is you brought in your search committee and you had Soup and you sat down and you found your guy. And then you were picking coaches before you had a general manager. Then you forced your new general manager to hire one of your people from your coaching list. So you already handcuffed the guy. You saddled him with a coach that wasn't his guy. If you really believe in a general manager you hired, you shut up and you sit back and you do the thing you said you were going to do and be a fan and just leave the football to somebody else. You hired your general manager. You let your general manager hire his coach. You've saddled your general manager with a coach. You saddled your general manager with a quarterback. And then the other rest of it, he did himself. And now I'm supposed to believe that Kevin Warren is going to be the savior of things. Why? Why? Because George hired him too. Is since Kevin Warren has been here, we had slam dunk get a new stadium going to be built in Arlington Heights. Although it was not the preferred place for me, I having a new stadium with a dome that's a modern stadium is what I want most of all. And they had the location. Slam dunk. We're building it here. Now, since we've hired Kevin Warren, this team has not won a football game in the regular season. We look worse than the team that got the number one overall pick last year. Significantly worse than that team. That team won two out of its first three games. We look significantly worse. And now we're further away from a stadium than we were a year ago.
And now everything's going backwards.
We are back to the drawing board. We might get a new city location. So what makes me think anything is going to change is George McCaskey is going to run it all back because he is scared to hire another general manager because every time he does, he knows what an imbecile he is and what a bad job he does. He should just be like, this is the guy I'm going to go with, and then hire the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, do the George Costanza. That's what other people are suggesting. Sean, this coaching staff should not survive after this game.
No.
You've lost 14 straight games. 14 straight games. And today you had a 28-7 lead at home. At home. In a game which your quarterback played great, where we were waiting for Justin Fields to have a game like this. He finally threw for over 300 yards. He threw for 4 touchdown passes. The offense was actually moving because you're actually playing to the strengths that are there. You are letting your quarterback throw downfield to DJ Moore. And your quarterback was looking confident. He was getting throws off with pressure coming to him in the first three quarters. He broke the record for Bears quarterbacks for consecutive completions in a game. His only incompletion in the first half was a Hail Mary at the end when you were throwing from behind the 50-yard line. Okay, whatever. Everything was clicking. Everything was going good. But then, Sean, I'll tell you, the second that Denver scored their first touchdown of the second half when they made it 28-14, I immediately thought, oh no. Because you saw on that drive, hey, there's Russell Wilson dropping back, having all the time in the world. Because your football team has 2 sacks in 4 games. 2. And the one sack that came today, did you see how hard they had to work to get that sack? How many broke tackles? How they finally had to take him down?
Third time was the charm on that.
Yeah. That's your second sack in 4 games. As soon as you saw Russell Wilson have all that time, you knew they were in trouble. And you knew that they were going to play scared. You knew that when they drove deep into the Denver territory at the end with a chance to take the lead back after the tie, you just had that gut feeling that they weren't getting 6. They were either going to settle for a field goal or they were going to come up on short on 4th down. What do? They call a timeout. They call a timeout on 4th-and-1 or 4th-and-2, whatever it was, only to just give the ball to Khalil Herbert right up the middle, which everybody in the building saw coming. Everybody. You couldn't roll out with Justin Fields. You couldn't do anything. All you do on 4th-and-short is you either punt it like a coward, you use a tight end sneak, or you do a predictable run up the middle play after a timeout.
Yep.
Everyone knew. Everyone knew they were losing that game after that.
You had 2 fourth down calls that you've botched both. The first one, when they decided to punt, you know your defense is dog shit. You know your defense is dog shit.
And you know their defense is dog shit too.
And you know they're going to score points. You don't want to lose by your team not having enough offensive chances. Go for it. Go for it on that first fourth down in the first half or the first quarter, your first drive when you're at the midfield. Go for it. Because you know what? If they drive 50 yards versus 80 yards, what's the difference? What's the difference?
Right.
It's the first drive. The one at the end of the game. All right. I'm fine with them when they lined up and tried to get an offsides.
Me too.
Perfectly fine with that. But the second you called the timeout, somebody that wasn't a complete bumbling fool, you have two options there. One is you line up to try to get the offsides, and then you call the timeout and you kick the field goal. That's option one. Option two is you line up with a play, try to get them to jump offsides, and if they don't, run the play then because they're on their heels because you know they're not ready to jump. Once you call the timeout, they're ready. They know you're not going to go try to get the offsides on that time. They're going for it. So they're ready to go. They're waiting for a play. Is if you try to get them on the hard count and they don't go, they're flat-footed. Then you go for it. You get that first down. Those are the two smart plays. And Eberflus bypassed the first one, then bypassed the second one. He bypassed both of those.
You know, you get that first down, they probably win that game, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Because Denver only had, one timeout left?
Yep.
You're going to run the clock down, and at the very worst, you kick a field goal. I mean, with time running out. You get that first down, you win. And if you don't get that first down, you lose. And they did. Wasn't the first play when the Denver Broncos got the ball back, wasn't that Russell Wilson throwing that deep bomb that put him into field goal territory?
Yep.
The only thing I'll give credit to the Bears is at least, I mean, to me, I thought they were going to drive down for an easy touchdown. They kept him at a 51-yard field goal try. But, I mean, you know, at that point, it just – and here's another thing, too, that I truly just – I don't understand is – listen, if you're at midfield, and this is going back to the first drive of the game when they punted, if you're not going to go at it there on the first possession of the game, but then you do it the second time, I mean, think about it. I think, you know, Denver's defense sucks. If they would have converted that first down instead of punting it, I think the way the Bears' offense was going, I think they would have scored there. That right there, if you score there, I mean, that's a big difference.
It's why do you bypass the 3 points? Is you score those 3 points, you force Denver to march all the way down the field with one timeout, knowing they have to kick a field goal to tie. It's just mind-boggling to me. It's just mind-boggling to me. And I want to point out, too, is, okay, Justin Fields played three really good quarters.
Yes.
He absolutely struggles in the fourth quarter, especially late in the fourth quarter. He struggles. That is his Achilles heel, is in the fourth quarter that – the fumble, half on him, half on the coaching staff. All you're trying to do is run out the clock. You're winning. You're just at that point, you're up by seven. You're just trying to run out the clock and win the game. Why are you running naked boots? I want to point this out is, what happened last week with the Denver Broncos?
They gave up 50 points or 70 points.
They allowed 350 yards rushing. 350 yards rushing. Why aren't you running the ball? If you came out in the second half, when you're already up, what, 28-7 or whatever, in, or 20, what was it, 21-7 at the half? What was
20, they built a 28-7 lead okay. before things went to crap.
Yeah. If it's 28-7 and you're Luke Getsy and you're not just smash mouthing, running behind your right tackle, you're adult. And I want to point this out is because you, all right, why put Justin Fields in that spot? You gave him the confidence boost. You're like, we put you in a position to win. You played well. He threw for what, 345 and four touchdowns. We're going to cap this off with pounding the ball down their throat. It's going to run out the clock and we're going to win this game.
Khalil Herbert was having a nice day overall.
Yeah. So the opposing team, their defense gave up 350 yards rushing last week. Guess how many rushes you had with a running back today?
How many?
23.
Hmm.
23. Khalil Herbert was averaging almost 6 yards a carry.
Yeah, he was having a real good day. And you didn't really see much of Roschon Johnson.
He got 5 carries.
Yeah, I can't believe it was that many.
Your running back's rushing for almost 6 yards a carry. You're trying to run the clock out. That's just stupid play calling. Stupid play calling. You passed 35 times, and your running backs had 23 carries. And when... And I said this last week, why do you keep doing that design quarterback run where you just sweep it to the outside?
It never works.
It never works. If you want a design quarterback run, let him be in the pocket. And then once he sees a hole, run from there, because that way the spy has to either commit or drop into coverage, and that's where you're able to get those yards. Don't call these stupid runs that don't work, especially to the short side of the field.
But the fumble
that was half on the coaching. That was just a terrible play call. There's nobody there. A free rusher came and just clobbered him.
Oh yeah. They ran Fields through an open door.
I mean, there was nobody. Nobody even touched him.
He had no chance.
And Justin Fields has to protect that ball better. Has to. And it's, you know, that was bad. The interception, I don't know who's to blame for that. It's a play where either they didn't practice that enough, or when the play broke a certain way, the quarterback had an expectation of the tight end, and the tight end did something different. And I don't know which one was right, or if either one of them was right. One of them had the wrong understanding of the play. And if you listen to them, Cole Kmet took credit for the, or, you know, took responsibility for it and said it was his fault. Justin Fields said it was his fault. And I don't know who is telling the truth, or if they're both lying.
I don't know.
Why is it that every time we have the opportunity to get a drive down the field and try to kick a field goal, we don't even get to that point.
It always ends the same way.
It ends in an interception. That's where the other team gets to cheer as they go off the field.
And listen, despite all that, Justin Fields is far low on my list for blaming for this loss, for all this, but it is frustrating that it ended like that. Did you see the stat? I don't know if you did, but NFL teams are now 43-2 all time when their quarterback threw for 300 plus yards, four touchdowns, while completing 80% of their passes. The two losing quarterbacks are Matt Ryan and Justin Fields. Fields is the first Bears QB all time with those numbers in a game. The first time a Bears quarterback ever threw for 300 yards, four touchdowns, and an 80-plus percent completion. First time ever, and they lost. How? What, you were up 28-7. There's one play I want to talk about. One in particular. Now, the stat sheet will say Cole Kmet had a good game today, right?
Yes.
Two touchdowns. Cool. But do you remember when things started to turn? It was third down, and Justin Fields threw to Cole Kmet, and it was incomplete. Do you know what play I'm talking about? Right in the middle of the field.
I might have been letting my dog out.
It was once again, and this really drives me nuts about Cole Kmet sometime. If there's any sort of contest, he can't make a contested catch. He's always wide open when he makes the catches, which, listen, when he gets wide open, great, that's cool. But he never beats anybody one-on-one, whether it's a contested catch or just out. As soon as he's tackled, he's going down. He's a massive dude. Meanwhile, you see Kelce and George Kittle, these other tight ends, they bowl over people. He just never out-muscles anybody. If there is any sort of protection against him from a defender, he can't out-muscle the defender. That's what I liked about Jimmy Graham. He was able to do that. Cole Kmet just can't, and it drives me crazy. And if he steps up and makes that catch, it's a first down. And you know what? Maybe the whole collapse doesn't happen then. It was in like the third quarter. It was when things were starting to turn and the Bears had to, it was like their first punt since the Coward punt on the first drive of the game. It's just that stuff drives me crazy. He's so big. He can never out-muscle anybody.
And that's why he's not dating Taylor Swift.
Maybe we need to change that. Maybe we need to break up Kelce and Swift and get Swift to date Cole Kmet.
I'm just so frustrated. And, you know, I don't know. I want to be hopeful, even though there's really no reason to be hopeful. I want to be hopeful and be like, okay, maybe the offense is figuring some things out. But I know for a fact that this was just a dog shit defense that they played against. And next week when they play, or later this week when they play Washington Commanders, everything's going to go to shit again because you're not going to have guys that are just wide open.
Well, look, even if there is some sort of solution here where the offense does get better, do you trust that defense to stop anybody?
No, not even
exactly.
A little bit.
Exactly. So it's if we're talking about winning games here, if Luke Getsy looks at this film and say, you know what, we did a better job at maximizing what Justin Fields can do. We used DJ Moore the way we actually should. We actually saw stuff from Darnell Mooney. When Cole Kmet did get open, you know, he was able to get two touchdown catches. So, you know, maybe the offense will look a little better going forward, but I don't trust this defense to stop anybody, especially with how banged up that secondary is. Hasn't Eberflus now broken the record for team giving up 25 plus points in consecutive games now in NFL history?
Probably. And here's the thing. We talked about we talked about they need to bring in a defensive coordinator, preferably somebody that's a veteran. And I actually heard Pat Manley talking about, you know, he would not be surprised if they brought Rod Marinelli in. Even if it was as a consultant rather than the actual defensive coordinator, but somebody in the during the week to help with things, is it's going to be hard to bring somebody in, because anybody that you bring in is going to look at this, go, man, I'm going to get associated with this when they get fired at the end of the season.
And man, I'm sorry. And look, all the respect to Rod Marinelli 15 plus years ago, but this 2005 style defense just doesn't work these days. You know, your Tampa.
I don't expect them. You've got to get somebody else in there. Another perspective that's not in this house to point out all the flaws that there exist.
I can't believe we're here at week four doing this.
You know, I had a plan. I was like, okay, we're going to be talking about, hey, we got the win. That's what's important. There's still a lot of flaws here, but we at least got the win. And instead, we had an epic collapse.
And now we're going on almost a full calendar year not winning a football game.
What do we need? Two more losses to hit the full calendar year?
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing. And Sean, I said this on Twitter earlier. Even though they were, you know, losing with a plan last year, it's still really hard in the NFL. And I get you could say, oh, the 08 Lions or the 2017 Browns. Those are kind of outliers. It is really hard in the modern NFL to play 14 straight games and not win a single one. No matter how good or bad your roster is, it is really hard to go that many games without winning a game. It just is. You know that. Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this league has so much parity. And any given week, I mean, we saw last week with Arizona beating Dallas. Arizona is so inferior to Dallas in every way, shape, and form, but they came out and won because there's a lot of parity. And any given Sunday, except the Bears. And what drives me even more crazy is I've watched pretty much every Packers game since this season, or at least chunk of, and Jordan Love has looked good in one game, but the narrative is going to be, it's the game that the whole country watched and it was the first one. So they're all like, oh, heat is off. We're not all riding him and making jokes anymore, but he's been bad because he got the luck of playing against a shit ass Chicago Bears team. If he would have played against the Lions in week one, everyone would have been clowning that dude.
Oh, yeah.
And instead, you know, rightfully, the Bears deserve every amount of the amount of shit that we're catching. But it's just, we're the laughingstock of this league. And honestly, if the shoes were on the other foot, like there was another team that was just so bad, I would lay off their fans because they're going through it. They're catching enough shit by fucking being the fan of this terrible franchise. You know, people keep reminding me, oh, your Bears stink. Thanks. I didn't recognize. You know, I haven't spent 3 hours every Sunday just watching it live and then letting it ruin my weekend every weekend for a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Boy, you know, I'll tell you what. You think it's bad now? Just wait till we play Detroit. Just wait till we play that team. Remember how ugly it was at the end of last year when they were in Detroit?
Mm-hmm.
Think about what Dave Montgomery's going to do to that team.
I mean, nobody's going to stop him.
No. And if nobody touches Jared Goff, he's going to throw for 400 yards against us. It's going to be a bloodbath of epic proportions. And, I mean, frankly, Sean, on the rest of the schedule, maybe you beat the Panthers. But can you honestly right now have any confidence in saying they can win any game? You could say, well, soft spot. Hey, you know what? We just played a team at home who just gave up 70 points. I know the Dolphins are good, but it is insanely historically hard to give up 70 points in an NFL game.
This was their best opportunity to win a game. Commanders, is it a winnable game? Yeah, but they're actually a solid team. Like they're going to be, I have not looked at early odds. I'm going to say the Commanders are a 5.5 point favorite.
Could be.
But the Commanders are better than you. Could you win? Is it an unwinnable game? No, but you're not going to. They're a better team than you. Then you have the Vikings, potentially winnable. That Vikings team is bad. That's a bad Viking team. They're better than you, but they're a bad team. The Raiders are pretty bad, especially if Garoppolo is going to be out for a while. That's a potential win, but then Chargers are going to whip your ass. Saints will have their quarterback back by them. They should whip you. And we saw
the defense is going to wreak havoc on your line.
That's got a good defense. Panthers, here we go. Somebody's got to win that game.
No, you could tie.
Then the Lions will whip you. Vikings, maybe. Lions will whip you. The Browns, they're going to win because they have a good defensive line. We get the Cardinals. Like, this is such an easy schedule.
And yet you can't, right now, you can't look at this team and say, hey, that right there is a free win. That right there is a free win. Because you know what? The whole league is looking at us as the free win.
Yeah. Like, the Cardinals are a better team than you. The Falcons, that's another winnable game. And then you're going to get destroyed by the Packers. So, I mean, Falcons, Cardinals, Browns, two Vikings, Panthers, Raiders, Commanders, those are all winnable games that you're not going to win. You know, when there's people that keep saying, oh, you know, the Bears fans were delusional, thought the Bears could win 8 games. It's not because we thought the Bears were great. We're like, the Bears improved on in theory, they improved the offensive line. They, in theory, improved every position of the defense. They improved the wide receiver core, and you have a full year in the system with your quarterback going to the third year, and you gave him an elite wide receiver. Like, okay. And plus, this schedule is easy. Those two combination should, the fact that you were in a lot of close games last year, okay, there we go. This is a team that could win some games. And they just went, nope, nope. The only good thing is if and when you bring in a new general manager for next season and a whole new coaching staff, you're not leaving them in a Ryan Pace type situation, where you've got an aging team and you're no salary room, no draft picks. You'll have good draft capital. You'll be in a good financial position. And the team, good or not, they're young. So at least that's an opportunity where somebody can step in and when I can make changes day one, not have to tear down and rebuild.
Yeah, silver linings, I guess.
I mean, that's all you can do.
I mean, the fact that we're even talking about this now in week 4, I mean, we've been talking about it since week 1, let's be real, but it's just depressing.
And I mean,
you know,
I'm on tankathon.com right now.
Oh boy. Don't we have the 1-2 picks right now?
Right now, we have number 1 and number 2. Rounding out the top 5 is Vegas at 3, Denver at 4, Minnesota at 5. And then Cincinnati at 6, New England at 7, Arizona at 8, Jets at 9, Giants at 10, Packers at 11.
I don't know why I'm even worried about winning games, but I also have this other irrational fear. What if with that soft schedule, we do claw out a few wins and it looks just respectful enough for everybody to keep their jobs? Like, listen, what if...
Bite your tongue. Bite your tongue.
Now, what
I don't know how. I don't know how they survive. I really don't.
They shouldn't. But never underestimate the stupidity of this organization. Do you remember how proud George McCaskey and Ted Phillips were when they went 8-8 a few years ago but backed their butts into the playoffs?
Well, I mean, we're a loser organization run by losers. So, of course, they think that would be
it's
something to celebrate.
It's a good season. We made the playoffs. Rah, 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 rah.
If you justify saying, hey, this was a good season because you made the playoffs, if you didn't make any noise in the playoffs and your chances of winning in the playoffs were like less than 3%, then that's not the flex you think it is.
Yeah, well, everybody understood that, but then. Because you know what the attitude at Halas Hall probably is right now? Well, you know, we improved because we almost won. That's better than the first three games.
This is a terrible team, period.
We haven't even talked about the Chase Claypool stuff either.
Oh, we haven't even talked about the press conferences during the week. Oh my God, the coaching staff should have been fired from what they had to say. I get if you're not the type of dude that's going to throw your players under the bus or call them out in public. But to say, you know what, we're really close to doing something special here. If by special you mean go 0-17, then yeah, you're on pace to do something special.
Mm-hmm. Good job.
So you had Getsy. Oh, we had good practices. We had good practices, and we're real close. And you had Shippard Eberflus. Oh yeah, we're close here. We're gonna do some good things. We're just gelling. We didn't have a lot of time in the preseason. You know what? Everybody had the same amount of time in the preseason. You chose to rest players and not play them. You chose that. Nobody else chose that. You chose that, Matt Eberflus.
Mm-hmm.
Is you look, if all of the winning teams came in and were like, oh, hey, you know, we're not going to play Pat Mahomes during the preseason. All right, well, then maybe you have something, a leg to stand on. But if Pat Mahomes is playing in the preseason and Justin Fields is not, then Matt Eberflus needs to start right then and there in preseason going, all right, am I screwing up here?
I think of everything and I don't even have any words anymore. I have no words. I mean, it's like when they lost this game, I was just speechless. Like, after being ready to talk about what could have been a really fun win where Justin Fields goes off and you're throwing flea flickers and you just, everything looks good offensively, and you go from that to this. It's just a microcosm of what everything is about this Chicago Bears team, where when you have a glimmer of hope, nope, it's going to be dashed by some really stupid crap. And the other sad thing, too, is when you see these quotes from the coaches, you know, building something special, blah, 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 blah. And it's all talk and no back. You know that ownership eats this up, and they're not gonna. What are they gonna do? Now, if we just got shocking news Monday morning when you're probably going to be listening to this that Eberflus was fired, I'll eat my words. But right now, I can't tell you that it's gonna change it all the rest of the season. Like this, I echo what a lot of people say. This should not be a survivable loss. And I don't care if it's week four. You're not just 0-4. You're 0 for your last 14. And now you have locker room issues. You have players bringing up the coaching staff. And you have this Chase Claypool drama where Eberflus says, we gave him the option to stay home. But really, they told him to stay home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everything that anybody from the team had to say about that situation was a lie. Is they asked Eberflus flat out, did this have anything to do with his comments? Oh, no. We just evaluate things during the week. Bullshit. That was 150% because of those comments. Because after he had the worst game of his career a couple weeks ago, that would have been justifiable if you said he'd be inactive. But at that point, you're like, we talked to him, and then we had him on the roster. This suddenly you talk bad. And did he say anything? Did he say anything that was wrong?
I don't think so.
Because my big fear is the Bears. So the rumor is the Bears have him on the trading block and they're trying to get a fifth or sixth round pick for him.
Good luck with that.
Is what if you trade him to a team like Kansas City and suddenly he looks amazing?
Oh, Andy Reid will find a way to make him work.
And then you look like a laughing stock because you traded essentially the 32nd pick in the draft for him. And you got half a season of bad football and then you traded him for nothing. And then he does well. That's an indictment on your team. This is a no-win situation here. Is I try to defend it because I understood what Ryan Poles was doing. He looked at the free agent market at wide receiver and was like, we're going to have to overpay for somebody that's not even that good. This is a bad thing. Let's get ahead of that and make a trade. They did, at that time, they had no idea that they were going to wind up with the first overall pick and thus the first pick of the second round. They had no idea. If they would have ended up being somewhere in the middle of the pack, and he would have balled out like you hoped he would, then you're like, okay, middle second round pick, and he balled out. Okay, whatever. We can live with it. But the fact that it ended up being, you know, with the Dolphins forfeit, the 32nd pick, and the fact that he's been bad, it just has not worked out. I understood the logic behind it, but it's been bad and
hasn't worked. Yeah.
And I'm frustrated that he was not benched for bad play. I'm frustrated that he was benched for calling out coaching that deserves to be called out.
Yeah. I mean, there's true no innocent party here, but I mean, it's pretty clear what's going on here. You know, it really, really is.
Why can't we all be honest? All of the fans know that this coaching staff is dog shit. We saw Ryan Poles and whoever that other guy was in the press box after Eberflus'd it. We saw what happened, the look on their faces. The guy face planted or put his fan on his face. He was embarrassed. And Ryan Poles looked like he just found his grandma dead on the ground. Like just a look of shock and disgust on his face. And so the front office knows what a shit show this coaching staff is. The players all know what a shit show this coaching staff is. And I would hope that the coaching staff knows that they're in so far over their heads and don't know what they're doing. Why can't we be honest about it?
All starts at the top. It feels so hopeless right now. And again, would a win today have made me do a 180 on this entire team? No, but it would have felt good just to get a win. As a fan, just to get a win, give the fans something to be happy about, and maybe you could say, hey, we can take this and maybe build on it. But no. Did you read the tweet about Justin Fields in the locker room after that loss?
No. The today's loss?
Yeah.
No.
Everyone was gone. He sat there in full pad still, just with a 1,000-yard stare, just motionless. It is one of the most heartbreaking tweets you can read.
We broke this kid.
We did. He gives you 335 yards and 4 passing touchdowns. Finally, has a big game statistically. And you see good things. And it's still all just screwed up. Because we last year we were able to play the tank loss game. Okay, Justin, you had a good day, but you know what the plan is here. We disassembled this. We know what's going on. But that's going to wear on you after a while, and you're not coming into this season with Super Bowl aspirations, but you're coming into this season with the goal to win some games, to actually win some games and to improve. And it is the biggest shit show in the NFL. We are the new Detroit Lions. All these years we laughed at the Lions, now we know what it feels like to be them. Truly. We've gone through some bad, mediocre regimes here. But this is truly as low as it gets. You have a coaching staff that is just in over their heads. Matt Eberflus may be a solid defensive coordinator. He's not a head coach. Luke Getsy might be good to have on a staff, not an offensive coordinator. And you don't have a good dynamic with your team right now. In that locker room, there is clearly not a good dynamic. Your D coordinator had to resign because of inappropriate behavior that HR got involved with. You have players calling out coaching publicly. You have one of those guys just dogging it on the field. There is not a good culture or work ethic right now here with this team. It is beyond a disaster.
Oh, it's so beyond a disaster.
Last year looked more like a rebuilding team where you're like, hey, we have a plan. We have a vision. We're losing with a plan. We know what we're doing. Just trust us. Ride it out. Because you lost a lot of competitive games last year. And there were games where you say, you know what? Our just lack of talent after tearing this roster down kind of did us in. Okay, fine. We accepted it. This is beyond that. This is going way backwards.
I mean, what happens when you have somebody like DJ Moore goes, I'm demanding a trade. What are you going to do?
Get what you can for him. That's all I could say.
And here's the thing is, if you fire your head coach, let's say you fire Eberflus, and you're like, you know what? This was just a disaster. Who's the interim head coach?
Next up would probably be Luke Getsy.
Do you want that?
Not really. I had the same conversation with my dad. Like, if you were to fire this coaching staff and bring in like some interim guys, that's well, you're the not best gonna, you could do. But like, they're not going to do it.
Nobody external is going to get hired. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to promote somebody, and everybody is in a job that's a grade, at least one grade too high for them. So who is going to be your head coach? Your special teams coordinator?
Probably something like that. You can't say your D coordinator. You don't have one.
Right? You're like, oh man, I would love to, and you can't even go up publicly if you're Ryan Poles and say, I would love to fire him right now. But what am I supposed to do? somebody's got to coach this team.
Right.
Is you definitely don't want it to be Getsy. And I mean, Hightower, is that the answer?
There truly isn't an answer. There's truly not.
Yeah, I mean, Richard Hightower. Then let's see the rest of your coaching. Dave Borgonzi, your linebackers coach. Your offensive quality control coach. Andrew Janoco, your quarterback's coach. Like, you are in so far over your head, everybody.
Maybe player coach Cairo Santos.
He's the only one that hasn't sucked this year. Him and Trenton Gill.
Yeah, let them be the coaches.
It is like we are so in over our heads here. And
it's only week four.
It's week four, and we're already talking about what a disaster this is. This is some week 12 shit. Week 12 and beyond. And we're week four.
Yeah.
We have
well more than half a season to go.
Oh yeah, I mean we're like a quarter of the way, not even a quarter of the way through the season, and this is what we got. And what's wild is I keep running across people on Twitter that are like, "Man, we should have never got rid of Matt Nagy."
Oh my God, stop!
Why is it that if we hire a bad coach to replace a bad coach, you think that we shouldn't have gotten rid of the first bad coach? No, it just, we shouldn't have hired the second bad coach. It's what we need is a good coach.
And
we're so far removed from having a good coach and this organization that people forget what it's like to have a good coach.
And honestly, I know people get mad at me when I say this, but I say the same thing about Lovey. I know he went 10-6 in his final year, but the Lovey thing was played out. It was very clear that they were not going to win a Super Bowl with that regime. If you remember that 2012 team, they started out 7-1 and they missed the playoffs. Okay,
here's what we have to remember about a lot of things is Bears fans have such bad memories and revisionist histories is, you know, they wax nostalgic. We should have never gotten rid of Robbie Gould. Every fan was riding Robbie Gould out of the city, including me, because he just, and he admitted to be let go to refocus on football, and he refocused.
Yep.
And that goes through so many kickers. There's teams that got rid of Cairo Santos because he stunk, but you know what? Now he's good. Kicking is such a mental game, and if you are not in the right headspace, not going to work, and you got to part ways. And he was being an agitator with the Bears organization, right or wrong, and he was not doing well, and he was making a lot of money. They just parted ways. And Lovie Smith, sure, he went 10-6, but like you said, and it wasn't a one-year thing. It was a, how many times can we have you hire a new offensive coordinator and it not work? It was the fact that they had the defense carrying them, and they couldn't find an offensive coordinator to do anything with.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it just didn't work out. And I love Lovey as a guy. Lovey is fantastic. He's like, you know, you would love to have him over for dinner. a genuinely nice man.
He's still the best coach of my lifetime, but.
But the thing, I mean, that's because you didn't go through the Buddy Ryan era.
No, I did not.
Buddy Ryan was an absolute asshole, but man, did he have a defense that could play. But, you know, Lovey's downfall was he could not get an offense. And, you know, you can't have half of a football team. And he collapsed that last year, and it was time to go. People will go, 10-6, that's a good record. No, it's not when you have a really good defense and you just can't put an offense together to save your life, and you go on losing streaks.
If you had any offense that year, I mean, you struggled on offense when you had Matt Forte, Alshon Jeffrey, and Brandon Marshall. If you would have had any sort of offense, you could have gone 13-3 that year. I mean, if you go back and watch those games, yeah, you beat the crap out of the Titans and the Jaguars that year. Those teams were terrible, but boy, I'll never forget the game they lost, like, what was it, 13-7 against the Texans at home, and then you lost 13-6, thank you. And then you had the game where you got blown out in Colin Kaepernick's debut. You had the grueling loss that was basically the end of the era against the Seahawks when you lost in overtime. You fell apart. You weren't consistent, and you weren't going any higher at that point with Lovey, and you just haven't hired the right guy since. Tressman, yeah, I mean, in his first year, the offense was good, but his defense under the creep Mel Tucker cost you a playoff spot, especially on the last play of the game against the Packers. And then, you know, that was disastrous in 2014. John Fox, accomplished coach, but not the right guy for what the Bears were trying to do. He was too old school at that point. He was fading in Denver as it was. Again, good resume overall,
but I do want to say is that was another situation where you hired a general manager, and then you said, "Oh, by the way, we're giving you a head coach."
Remember when they hired Mark Trestman over Bruce Arians because Mark Trestman had the mock press conference?
Yes.
And then, you know, John Fox is forced. And then you're like, okay, well, why don't you go out and get an offensive guy? Hey, here's Matt Nagy. Oh, well, you know, he's the bald guru egghead who didn't end up being an offensive guru like we hoped he did and was carried by a defense in his first year. And that faded out really fast. And, you know, the sad thing is, at least Matt Nagy had his moments. His first year division title, first double-digit win season since 2012. And that was more than Trestman or Fox accomplished, but he at least had his moment. Eberflus has won 3 games in just over a year as Bears head coach.
I don't want to give Matt Nagy too much credit. I give most of that credit to the defensive coordinator.
Well, I do too, but at least that first year, even if Nagy wasn't great his job, he at least went in there. At least you got to admit the culture in 2018 was pretty good around that team. Vibes were pretty good.
Yeah, but winning football games gives you good vibes. There's not too many teams that are winning games and have dysfunction in the locker room.
Which
winning
cures
most ails.
I hear you. I do. But I always felt like as bad as things got under Matt Nagy, I never sensed a really toxic locker room like we saw in other regimes.
Fair. That's fair.
I mean, even when Lovey was around, I think he was a good guy, but there was clearly some toxicity there, and there was a lot of toxicity in the Trestman locker room. We know that for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I just...
I just...
This is so bleak.
Yeah, it's going to be a brutal next... Let's see, week four, next 14 weeks.
We have that long to go.
And I know some, I know a lot of people are like, oh, you know, we got a game Thursday and then we'll have a mini bye. And
so what?
And Tyson Bagent's going to be the quarterback. Is why? I mean, I guess if next week or, you know, on Thursday, Justin Fields just looks like absolute dog shit against Washington. But why? And here's another thing. I talked about how the Bears love to hire a general manager and then force a head coach onto him. That's a total Bears move. Another one is saddling a new GM with a quarterback. You know, that's is if the Bears continue what they're doing right now, they're going to wind up with the number one overall pick and have the potential to draft. I mean, this year it was a pretty easy decision to make. You're like, okay, our guy's going into his third year. And then with the trade, we were able to add him a real wide receiver. Let's see what we can do here. And plus the quarterbacks in question, Bryce Young, extraordinarily talented. He's just, the questions are, can he hang in this league being that size? We already saw he got injured and they already won't quarterback sneak with him. So they put in, have you seen, they put in Andy Dalton when they're going to do a quarterback sneak. So like his size is an issue and you don't want to invest so much in a guy that's that size. And there was a lot of questions about what's his name from Ohio State, but he's proving to be great.
Caleb Williams.
No. From Ohio State, the number 3 overall pick.
CJ Stroud.
CJ Stroud. He's looking fantastic.
Yes, he is. He is looking
absolutely fantastic.
He looks but very good.
There was a lot of questions coming out about him. And so like, I see not investing, you know, when you can take those draft picks and then see what you have with Justin Fields. But if you get the number one pick this year and Caleb Williams comes out, aren't you foolish to not take Caleb Williams? Regardless of what, and it's not even going to be a knock on Justin Fields but for a couple of reasons. One is what if you pass on Caleb Williams and he becomes a regular Pro Bowl type top 5 quarterback like he's expected to be?
Then he'd be blessed because then we wouldn't have a chance to ruin him.
But what I'm saying is the Bears are already a laughing stock because they took Trubisky over Mahomes. This will be worse because it'll be, they passed. Mahomes was a guy that you're like, oh, there are a lot of questions coming from Texas Tech. This guy is a very Mahomes-like, except he's playing at USC. You lose all those questions about being a system quarterback when he comes out of USC.
You're saying it'd be worse on draft day, not hindsight, right?
I'm saying, yeah, is, you know, it wasn't a big deal on draft night, take Patrick Mahomes, but it became a big deal, you know, when he started playing.
Well, I would argue that it was a big deal taking Trubisky, but I think a lot of people compared it more to not taking Watson than Mahomes.
Yes, that was, Deshaun Watson was the one people were like, why didn't they take him?
Right. I think there was even rumor too that John Fox actually did want him.
But you know, if you pass on Caleb Williams and he looks fantastic and becomes the guy that you expect him to be, you become a big laughing stock. And as a GM, you look like a complete idiot. Number two is are you at the point where you're ready to pay a quarterback when you still have rebuilding to do, if you take a new quarterback, you reset that clock and you go, okay, now we've got five more years of cheap quarterback and we can do this right and build it the right way. And whatever draft capital you get for trading Fields, I think at this point is you've got to get what you can out of him to make him more valuable in the draft, because you're going to be a terrible team. And then bringing a new quarterback, or I mean a new coaching staff, that's not going to get this guy murdered. Somebody with a track record. And whoever it is, there needs to be an experienced head or experienced coach on the staff. Like if you bring in an offensive guy, which you better, your defensive coordinator better be somebody with lots of years of success as a defensive coordinator in this league, preferably a former head coach.
Yeah, hire a real coach.
Yeah, if you go with a high upside offensive mind, you better pair him with somebody that is so experienced that, you know, that you are essentially just being the offensive coordinator with a pay bump.
I don't even, it makes me sick that we're even talking about this in week four, but here we are.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so frustrating. And I've already seen mock drafts where, you know, Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. And I'm like, you know what? As cool as it would have to have both those guys, haven't we learned anything? We need a pass rusher. We need a pass rusher or a stud interior lineman.
We need a lot of things. I mean, let's be real. We need a lot of things.
You know, and I know there's been some caws about the fact that we passed up on Jalen Carter, and
I'm still okay with that.
I'm still fine with it because he would not have been good with the Bears. And
are people forgetting that he was involved in a crime scene?
Yeah. I mean, there were two people died.
And how awful that combine was.
Yeah.
I'm going to support Ryan Poles on that decision.
I'm fine with that. And the tackle that we got, sure, he got some flags today, but boy, is he looking good. And there, you will not find a former professional offensive lineman that does commentary now that watches him play and isn't impressed by him. He looks good out there. There's things he's got to clean up, and there's things he's got to learn. And, you know, he's going to have some rookie moments where he gets beat by experienced edge rusher because they put him on an island out there. But boy, does he look good out there. And yeah, if you wind up with a 10-year tackle, you know, I'm fine with that. Even if Jalen Carter goes on for a Hall of Fame type of career, you go, you know what? We got a really good player. And, you know, if you have a 10-year starter, you live with it. When we lost out to on Aaron Donald, because he went the pick before us and we took Kyle Fuller, I still to this day, I don't lament that. And man, the Bears should have traded up to get that. Is Kyle Fuller played several years for us at a really high level and played really well. And he's nowhere near the player Aaron Donald was. But I go, okay, it wasn't a wasted draft pick. You have to look at your draft pick and go, is this a player? And did we get a quality player that beat our expectations at that draft position? And if you draft a guy that's a 10-year starter for your team, then even if it was a first-round pick, yeah, that's a beating expectation. And I don't look at who they could have got, who would have, could have, and should have. Is what, 9 teams passed up on Jalen Carter for obvious reasons?
Mm-hmm.
Is he went to the one place, maybe there's a couple others, but he went to a place that was the absolute best place he could have gone. And he went there and they've put him in position to be successful. You've surrounded him with strong leadership, a strong organization, good players around him, and former teammates. It's the ideal spot.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that people are bringing that up now, just stop. That was the right decision there.
I agree. I agree.
There's so many things that you can beat up Ryan Poles for. That is not one of them.
I agree.
Because can you imagine us in this losing manner we're in and having to deal with him?
Yeah. No. Oh, boy. No, I'm totally with you.
So we've got the Commanders this week and on Thursday night game. So the whole world gets to see how bad the Bears are.
As if they didn't already know.
They know, but now it's on display. Should we keep this fire going and talk about the Cubs?
Yeah, let's have our funeral for the 2023 Cubs.
I want to preface by saying that if you told me what the record was for the Cubs, without any context, just you...
83 wins and in the playoff hunt until game 161.
Yeah, and you told me that at, you know, the first day of opening day, I would have said, wow, that's a successful season, because none of us talked about like that. Oh, this was a team that was going to have a winning record. I think we all said at best, everything goes right, this is a 500 team.
Yeah. And most projections had them at like 77, 78 wins.
Yeah. That I had them, I believe, at 78. Mm-hmm. And so they beat my expectations, but then you put an asterisk there because things went well. There was a lot of things that went well. And at one point, very recently, they had like an 86% chance. 92% chance of making the playoffs, and they didn't make the playoffs.
They sweep the Giants. They were in the driver's seat to make at least the top two wild card. Probably not number one, that's the Phillies, but they were sitting well in the driver's seat to be the second wild card. And then you started the 4-game series with Arizona, and it just, everything went to crap from there. Man, this week, you had this 28-7 blown lead for the Bears. This came just days after those back-to-back gut-wrenching losses by the Cubs in Atlanta. The blown 6-0 lead, and you had the 4-3 lead going to the ninth. You blew that too and lost in extras. You go back to the Cincinnati series. You blew the back-to-back one-run leads on the road. You lost those two games in Colorado. You fumbled away the games against the Pirates. And I think the defining loss was the 13-inning loss to Arizona in Arizona. That loss right there, I think everybody went, uh-oh, we might be in trouble here. And it was. And you know what? I can say two things, and I think they're both true. This was a fun season overall where we saw a lot of growth and we saw reason to be hopeful going forward. We saw good things from guys on the team, within the organization, and I think there is positivity going forward. You can, but you know what? Just as equally, you know, you had a playoff spot and you blew it. You blew it. You lost some grueling games, and unfortunately, that bullpen that was banged up as hell, they were completely out of gas. When you saw Mark Leiter Jr. go and face Marcelo Zuna in that ninth inning against the Braves, and he throws a 3-0 91 pitch, just right to, I mean, Mark Leiter Jr. by the end, he threw a ton of innings this year. He had nothing left. Palencia is still young and kind of all over the place. Albert Alzolay was hurt. Michael Fulmer was hurt. You ran Jose Kwas into the ground because you didn't have that many other options. That bullpen was just completely out of gas. And you had some players, position players too, that just completely went into slumps, especially Dansby Swanson.
Yeah. Here's the reality is your starting pitching had injuries, and towards the end, you had some guys that got gassed. Assad and Justin Steele sort of really struggled the last couple outings. You saw chinks in the armor. That bullpen combination of injuries, guys being gassed, guys being overutilized, you saw that issue. You had injuries with position players, and you had a manager that made a lot of poor decisions. And can you blame him for Dansby Swanson struggling at the end? And no. Can you blame him for Seiya Suzuki and having an error, or can you blame him for a lot of things? No. But the fact that every other playoff bound team had a winning record in one run games except the Cubs, absolutely blame.
When you had a run differential of like 100 and the Marlins have like a minus 51 differential.
Yep. If you were to flip your record in one run games, so every game that you won, you lose, and every one you lost, you would have won. So you flip your one run game differentials, you make the playoffs.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to say it. You could have won a few games. Maybe if you got Canario. Every time Canario went in there, he mashed. The refusal to play him was just mind-boggling. Continuing to let Mike Tauchman lead off when he was in a bad slump. That's what drives me crazy. When Ian Happ looks better in other positions in the lineup, but you put him back at third. It's not all David Ross's fault. It's not.
There are reasons
to look and say, hey, there were some decisions here that might have been costly in some of these games.
Is a manager in MLB worth 10 wins? No. But he didn't need to be. He needed to be not stubborn, and he needs to trust some younger players and be willing.
A manager can more easily lose you games than win you games.
Correct. And I think you need to upgrade your manager. We saw Theo Epstein do that. The Cubs had a manager that we all knew wasn't great, but we liked, and he was relieved of his duties because they saw the opportunity to bring in Joe Maddon.
It's not going to happen. David Ross is going nowhere.
I don't think so either, but
Tom Ricketts all but confirmed it today.
It's, but I,
And the other difference, too, is that organization is hell-bent on making David Ross work and be their guy. They brought him in to groom him to be a manager. They, from the day David Ross retired, he was going to be their next manager after Madden was done.
You know, everybody saw the writing on the wall there.
Yeah. And that's not going to change after they had a winning season. It's just not. Whether you like it or not, it's not going to happen.
I just want to say, is the frustrating part about that is that in a couple of weeks, Craig Counsell is going to be a free agent manager.
Mm-hmm.
He is significantly better, than David Ross.
Mm-hmm.
Significantly better.
Steve Cohen's going to give him that payday so he can work with David Stearns again, probably.
And the frustrating part is, like, his family's in Wisconsin. It would be such a short commute if he goes to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And he's from Indiana, South Bend. So you're like hour and a half-ish. So you're close to where you grew up. You're close to where your family is now. You stay in the same division. It makes a lot of sense. Open up the pocketbook and pay him.
Too bad they're not.
Oh, I know. We know exactly what's going to happen. So then it becomes, all right, you've got some money coming off the books. What do you do now?
I think you're going to have to get creative with some trades here. You have all this prospect capital. The free agent class, it's pretty strong with starting pitchers. I think you add another starting pitcher, but do you get in on the Juan Soto sweepstakes? I mean,
I don't think so. You're going to have to give up a lot for him and spend a lot. And he hasn't shown, like, he's a phenomenal player, but you need a phenomenal player that's going to make your team better.
Well, I think he would.
I mean, the Padres.
Not all his fault, though. I know he got off to kind of a slow start there, but I still think he's better than what he was at his worst because he did heat up later. But I'm not expecting it to happen. I don't want to say that. I mean, the thing that kind of sucks is you look at two options here. You look at Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani, and I don't think, frankly, either of those are the right. I think they are the right solutions. It's just they're not going to be implemented.
I mean, here's the thing. All right. If you bring in Juan Soto, the part is your biggest, or, you know, most of your, you have a lot of good outfield prospects coming up. And Seiya Suzuki at the end of the season showed you why you signed him in the first place.
Yeah, he was great in the second half. It's really encouraging.
So that means Ian Happ's got to go then, right?
There's a DH. You have a DH for a reason.
True. Then I guess Morel becomes your third baseman?
Maybe they package Morel in a deal.
Maybe.
I'm just saying, like, I think that there is a small handful of players that you can really lock in going forward. Dansby's going to be part of the equation. Nico is going to be part of the equation. Suzuki and Happ are going to be part of the equation. Other than that, I could see Morel being in a package, or Nick Magical, or Marcus Stroman if he opts in.
He's absolutely opting in.
And you know what? I think you should try to trade him.
Oh, yeah. He should still be traded. Absolutely. I don't, It's I think you try to trade him. He's going to opt in, and I think you're going to get a buyer for him.
I think so too. Even with the way it ended kind of ugly, I do think that there would be a team willing to give you something for him. Might not be a lot, but maybe he's a throw-in in a bigger trade, but I don't think he's untradeable by any means.
I think number one is you've got to re-sign Bellinger. I don't think they're going to. And
I don't think so either.
Based on Bellinger's comments, it doesn't sound like he thinks the Cubs are going to try to sign him anyway.
I'm going to say one thing about that. If you're a player hitting free agency, hitting a market, you don't want to sound like you're committed to anything. I think that's just player managing 101 right there. But with that being said, if I had to bet on him being back or not being back, I'd bet that he's not going to be back.
I don't think so either.
Here's my worry. I'm not giving up on PCA. Don't take this the wrong way. But there's part of me that just can see, look ahead to next year and the Cubs, depending on PCA and Matt Mervis being the gap fillers in center field and first. If PCA is part of your long-term plans, okay. But if you're relying on both of those, maybe it would pay off, but that's awfully risky. I
hope you learned a couple of mistakes this year. Is don't bring in bullshit ass players as to be placeholders for a prospect that you're counting on. That was a mistake.
Yes, and Sean, if you ask me what the most frustrating thing about the 2023 season was, it was all the time you wasted in the first half.
Yep.
When Eric Hosmer was batting in the middle of your lineup, and you signed Tucker Barnhart, and everyone just kind of went, really? Like, stuff like that, that's got to stop.
Here's the thing. Wins and losses in April and May don't seem very important, but wins in April and May count the same as wins in September.
Mm-hmm. And every time you try to say that, everyone says, calm down, you're overreacting, blah, blah, blah. Just look at this year. I will just point to this year. Flip a number of those grueling losses to wins in April and May. You could have won the division.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Those games that got away against the Marlins, the few of the games that got away against the Brewers, so the really bad sweep against the Reds. You can look at all that stuff, and you lost some of those in grueling fashion, just like the end of the season. When you were bunting with Patrick Wisdom and relying on Eric Hosmer to come up with big hits, or when you were having Miles Mastroboni in the lineup every day when he should just be a 26th man at most, when you should use him as a pinch hitter in certain situations or a pinch runner, not starting him every day. That cost you wins. That drove me nuts. And they paid for it. They paid for it. It caught up to you.
You cannot rely on, if PCA comes in to spring training and looks like the dude that we're expecting him to be, that's when you can be like, okay, we're going to count on this guy. But if you can't have high expectations for so many young players, and you're already going to have to rely on a lot of young pitching to come in and do well. You can't be relying on young hitters as well. If I go into this, I'm paying Bellinger. If you trade for Soto or you try to sign Ohtani is my fear with Soto. Great hitter, fantastic hitter. Is he going to move the needle to win baseball games? Or is he going to be a stats guy? And that would be my fear. Then my fear with Ohtani is you're going to pay through the nose for him. If you're the Cubs, the odds are he's going to the Dodgers. You're going to have to overpay to get him. And he's not going to pitch for you next year.
Well, that's the thing too, is would I take that bat from Ohtani 10 times out of 10? Yes. But if you give him a lot of money, here's the thing is he's had some injuries already. And while I don't worry about like his bat going away, I question how much longer we're going to get something out of that arm, even after he fully recovers.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all. And so you're already going to lose 1 year of a limited pitching window. So you're going to pay that much for his bat. It's a fantastic bat. His bat would help you 100%.
Yeah, it would be a massive improvement.
Are you willing to go into the luxury tax to do it? Because I don't think you can sign him and build the team that you want to build. I don't think you can build the team you want to build and sign Ohtani and be not go over the cap.
Now, I'm not so sure Tom Ricketts is willing to do that.
I don't think so either. That's why I say, it's not likely.
This is the problem when you don't have a Chris Bryant-like prospect in the wings. They got a lot of prospects with some promise, but there's a bit more mystery. And I'm going to change my tune from about a month ago when they called PCA up. I got to tell you, there are times where I really just wish we left him in AAA. Because, I'm not giving up on him, but he was clearly not ready for the big leagues.
No, and I'm not writing him off by any stretch. I think it's a mentality thing. I don't think he was ready. Physically, right. I think he'll be there. It's there are guys that can make that transition that don't have the talent but do okay, because they're just mentally prepared. I think, we saw how bad the first time Javi Baez came up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he had to figure out a lot of things. And I think PCA has the staying power of being a long-standing Major League Baseball player. We've just got to prepare him. And I think putting him in the late season when he's trying to turn this struggling team around, you're in a playoff hunt. And I think it didn't put him in the best light to win.
And he was being used at one point as basically a defensive replacement.
Right.
When he was called up, I was excited. I'm like, okay, this is cool. But I kind of look back at it now, and I just wish they kept him in AAA. I really do. Not saying it's going to hurt things in the long run, but we can't kid ourselves. We saw a kid take at bats in the majors that was clearly not major league ready.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you.
Canario's bat, I think, was more major league ready, but the dome man barely played him. But when he did play, he hit the crap out of the ball. I'm still a little salty about that. But it's moot now.
Maybe they're relying on the boatman to come up.
No, man. I mean, you know, it's... I question a lot about how things were handled, but, I mean, all in all, we do have to look at a lot of positives, right? I mean, Justin Steele had a great season. Kyle Hendricks came back and had a very respectable season, better than I expected. Nico Horner was really good. Dansby Swanson as a whole was good. Those last 2 months were killer, though. Like, we can't... We can't pretend like that didn't really hurt the team. But overall, if you would have said in the, you know, offseason, hey, he'll hit about 240, have about a average, slightly above average OBP, hit 20-plus home runs, and be one of the most valuable defenders in all of baseball. Yeah, numbers-wise, performance-wise overall, pretty much gave you what you expected. I think Ian Happ gets a little too much crap for the production he does give. I don't think he's a three-hole hitter, and I also think that cost the Cubs some games, but you look at overall, he still put an OPS in the high 700s and over 20 homers, so, and a really good OBP, so you'll take that.
And a plus defender.
Yeah, I mean, he made some bad plays, but overall, still a plus defender. And then, you know, you have a lot of arms in the system, and you feel good about a lot of that stuff. So I do think this is all trending upwards. I just, if you're going to lose bad at the end, I'd rather have made the postseason and then just get killed by the Phillies or something. But it's over. It's done. I think fans are disappointed, but still looking ahead with their heads held up high. That's the sense I'm getting from the Cubs fans. The dust is going to settle. We're going to kind of move on from those last few weeks, and we're going to look forward. It's still going to sting, but can we be real here for a second? This was not a team that was going to win a World Series, even if they made it, right?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, nothing is you never can say never, because I did feel that some of those later Cubs teams from the World Series roster when they made the postseason, I felt no chance of them winning because of just so many struggles. Felt this team, you know, like when they swept Atlanta the first, or that one series they swept Atlanta, if they play like that, you're like, oh man, I feel like they had the chance. It was just real slim.
Yeah, and remember, that was midseason when they won two or three out of Atlanta, and they really grinded their way to get it. You expelled a lot of energy to dig yourself out of that hole, and I just think by the last few weeks, the energy you used to dig out of that hole was all used up, you know? It was all used up, and it was everything just ran out of gas. But you watch that Braves team again this last time around, and you realize, holy shit, that team is in another league.
Bullpen is, we went in the season assuming we can do what we did in previous years, is turn somebody else's garbage into a very good bullpen. And in some ways, they did. It's just between injuries and early on struggles were really bad.
Yeah.
And that I think set the tone. Hey, there's nobody we can rely on. And by the time that we figured out people to rely on, we had burned out some guys. And then between injuries and burned out guys, it just struggled towards the end.
Oh yeah. I mean, like I said, Mark Leiter Jr. was used for so many innings. And here's the other thing too. You need some more lefties next year. You basically didn't have lefties this year. The closest thing you had to a lefty specialist was Mike Leiter Jr., but he was a righty. And you hope that Luke Little is going to be one of those solutions next year. And, you know, the one that was kind of frustrating was Daniel Palencia, because the stuff is really, really good. He's just so wild at times.
I'm going to throw a name, and I want to gauge your reaction. to if they move the needle for you for the bullpen for next year.
Okay.
Cody Hoyer.
Two major injuries. If you had asked me before the second injury, when he was on his way back, I would have said absolutely. But that's two major injuries. I don't know if I just I don't know if you're going to see it.
I'm excited to see him go to spring training, hopefully healthy. I'm excited for him to have the opportunity to try to win a spot. But I'm very, very realistic about the odds. If he bounces back to who the guy we thought we were getting,
that'd be amazing.
That would be huge. Because then you have Alzolay and Hoyer as your 8 and 9 guy. And that makes the rest of your bullpen so much easier to construct.
I agree. It would be ideal.
So if I'm Jed going into this offseason, my first priority is re-signing Bellinger. I attempt to sign Jaime Candelaria to a short deal. I don't know if he accepts it, but if he does not,
he was pretty bad outside that opening week.
I try to get him on a short deal, and if you don't, then your next move is you work real hard to make Christopher Morel a better fielding third baseman.
Whatever you did with Nick Madrigal, whatever magic you put over Nick Madrigal, use that.
Do you pick up the option on Hendricks?
I think they do.
Do you think Stroman opting in changes that? Or do you think do you think they automatically go and try to trade him?
I would not be surprised if they try to trade him.
Because I think you can only live with one of those guys.
Yeah, especially considering neither of them miss a lot of bats.
I don't know what else you do here. I still think I'm okay with making trades, but I don't think you trade what's necessary for Juan Soto. And I'm fine bidding. I mean, they better be bidding on Shohei Ohtani.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I don't think whatever he's going to go for is going to be worth it for your team. My opinion on Bellinger is I think the Dodgers are not going to be an option. I'm not going to say animosity, frustration with his time there at the end, that it won't be an option. So that takes away one realistic team that would try to sign him.
Won't be Jerry Reinsdorf. He's made that clear.
Oh, I don't know. What's your Cubs moves here, knowing that it's like the playoffs haven't even started yet?
I think you try to get Shohei Ohtani. If you don't get him, go to try to re-sign Cody Bellinger. I think you add another starting pitching, one, and then you, because yeah, you got a lot of guys coming up, but there's a pretty solid market of starting pitchers. I think you try to add one there. I think, however it may be, you got to figure out third base. Whether he's on the team or he's not on the team yet, you got to figure that out. I'm not really high on the Matt Chapman idea, so I'm going to brush that away. But I think regardless of how you do it, you need to figure that out. You really do. You can't.
Yeah, what's the third base market? I mean, that's got to be a trade, right?
Yeah, it's a trade, something internal. I mean, Matt Chapman would be like the big one available, but I don't really want to spend a lot of money on Matt Chapman.
Let's see, Ohtani, Bellinger. Yeah, I don't want to spend on Chapman.
They'll sign Mike Moustakas.
Let's see, third base. Evan Longoria. yeah, Matt Chapman's also going to be 31. Justin Turner, no. Eduardo Escobar, no.
Well, he's got an option, I think, Justin Turner, so.
A player option, you're right, he does. Eduardo Escobar, no, but he's got a team option, but I don't, even if he goes. Matt Carpenter, no. Matt Duffy, no.
I like Matt Duffy, but no.
Josh Donaldson, double no.
Hell no.
Yeah, that's the free agent third baseman. They're all over 30, except for Candelaria, but he'll be 30 by the time free agency starts, I think, or close to it.
Yeah, so they got some figuring out to do there.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's why I'm saying is, I would at least throw a contract at Hymer, and if he's not willing to do like a 3-year deal at reasonable terms, you say no, and you work with Morel.
This is going to be a long off season.
A lot of work to do.
A lot of work.
I think there's a real possibility to make a winner out of this team, but yeah, you can't White Sox this.
No, and you want to talk about having a lot of work to do. The White Sox have a lot of work to do under new general manager Chris Getz.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's quickly talk about that is that team came into this season with division winning aspirations.
You were still in your window despite the year before.
Right. And you've got $100+ million to spend. But the thing is you need a lot. I mean, let's start off with, you need a left-handed pop in your bat, in your lineup.
Which I feel like we've been saying for like 15 years.
You need starting pitching.
Yeah, I mean, you need pretty much an entire rotation at this point.
Yeah. You need a catcher.
Mm-hmm.
You need to upgrade it over your third baseman.
I don't think he's going anywhere.
I don't think so either. What are you doing with your shortstop?
I still think they'll exercise the option, and I don't know if he's actually going to be on the team, but I don't think they're just going to let him go.
You need better production at second base. You need another outfielder, and you need some bullpen help. You need a whole lot. And Dylan Cease has gotten worse for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, do I think he can rebound? Yes, but there were times I think he had a little bit of bad luck, but it definitely wasn't as good as we had hoped. And
his command is terrible.
Yeah, that's an issue because even when he pitches okay, he's going like five innings. Like you need longer than that, and that's kind of an uphill battle from him. And then, you know, everywhere else, Lucas Giolito is gone. Michael Kopech is just not a starter.
Nope.
Maybe you try but he is not a starter. You're probably going to keep Mike Clevinger.
I mean, is it a mutual option that he has, or is it?
I don't know what it is, but I feel like the White Sox want to keep him around. Though maybe Chris Getz feels differently. I don't know, but I do feel like if Rick and Kenny were still around, they'd 100% keep Mike Clevinger around. But you need a lot more in that rotation. And I don't know if there are any pitching prospects that can immediately come up next year. I know they have that one kid that's going through the system, but that they recently drafted, that one pitcher, forgive me, I'm blanking on his name, but I don't think I don't know if he's going to be ready yet or not. But either way, there are pitchers on the market. So the White Sox, I feel like they're going to go out and spend some money on some of these pitchers. If they're going to use the money they got to spend, I do feel like they're going to bring in a few starting pitchers.
Clevinger is a mutual option, and I'm hearing he's going to opt out. He didn't want to be here.
Who else is going to give him a shot? I know he pitched well, but we all know the off-field stuff.
I think a team might, because it's a year behind. And
probably.
There's been no flare-ups, so it's a possibility.
So if that's the case, then that's another pitcher they have to replace.
So they've got Tuki Toussaint.
Nah.
Not
good.
Garrett Crochet says he'd like to be a starter.
Oh, come on. If they're seriously going to go into next year with Garrett Crochet being a starter,
they've got Jesse Schultens and Tanner Banks. Davis Martin and Sean Burke from AAA.
You need to add free agents.
Yeah, but are they going to pay?
I mean, they'll have money to spend.
But will
they're not going to spend top money on top guys, but there's plenty of guys out there that they could realistically spend for. I mean, because probably the best part of the market this offseason is going to be starting pitchers, higher end guys, mid end guys. Because if you actually look at who's on the market, so here's some of the names you have. Obviously, Shohei Ohtani, that's not happening. And I'm just doing UFAs, so no club or mutual options or anything here. Ohtani, Kershaw, Hyun-Jun Ryu, Martin Perez, Well, Julio Urias, you don't want that. Adam Wainwright also retiring. Zach Greinke.
Is he retiring?
He probably is.
I thought he said he was retiring.
That wouldn't surprise me. You're probably right. Alex Wood, Carlos Carrasco, Aaron Nola, Giolito, Sonny Gray, Blake Snell, Luis Severino, Kyle Gibson, Jordan Montgomery, James Paxton, Michael Lorenzen, Rich Hill, Jake Odorizzi, Tyler Mahle, Frankie Montas, Brad Keller, Jack Flaherty, Vincent Velasquez, Kenta Maeda, Julio Tehran, Dallas Keuchel, Tommy Malone, Luke Weaver, Jose Urena, who was with the White Sox this year. So those are some names. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of other players on this list too that have like options that could be free agents, like Stroman if he opts out, Lance Lynn, Eduardo Rodriguez, Kyle Hendricks, Ross Stripling, Andrew Henny, Mike Clevenger, Alex Cobb, good old Johnny Cueto. But like, I mean, you know, would you go after a Hyun-Jun Ryu, or would you go after an Alex Wood, or a Sonny Gray? Because Sonny Gray is going to be one of the bigger bread makers, I think, if you're a free agent pitcher right now. I mean, his market value is currently $20 million. Jordan Montgomery is another one, too. If you were to kind of go hard, probably more realistic for me. I could see them going after like a James Paxton or a Michael Lorenzen. So I feel like they'll add somebody.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm on a White Sox thread, and it seems that their expectation will be starting pitchers will be Dylan Cease, Michael Kopech, Jesse Schultens, Tuki Toussaint, and a free agent.
If they go in with that rotation, Sox fans should just not show up.
Oh, absolutely. They should just never, never come in ever again.
They should all get their own puking stilts and just bleh, bleh, bleh.
And honestly, if you're going to tank, you might as well just try to trade Dylan Cease.
So what's going to happen here? Because it sounds like Jerry Reinsdorf wants to win as soon as possible. It's going to be really hard to turn this around in 1 year. So,
I mean, let's look quickly. So as it stands, right, you have $100 million to spend-ish. Your catcher is Sebi Zavala. Okay. Andrew Vaughn at first. Second baseman. Romy Gonzalez? Lenin Sosa? Tim Anderson at short. Yoan Moncada at third. Benintendi, Luis Robert, and Oscar Colas, or Victor Reyes as your outfielders. And then we saw the rotation.
They're going to resign Elvis Andrus, aren't they?
That would be a very White Sox thing to do. I mean, I think once we start seeing the moves that they make, I think we'll know whether or not that this new general manager is just another puppet.
Agreed. And, you know, I do kind of want to give Chris Getz a chance because he's hired some guys for his staff that are pretty well thought of guys.
But the thing is do we ever think that it was Rick Hahn's fault, or do we all know that it was Jerry Reinsdorf?
I mean, with a lot of it was Jerry Reinsdorf, and I think a lot of it was also Kenny Williams.
So we didn't remove the biggest problem with that organization, which is Jerry. Jerry's still there. I don't know how Chris Getz is going to be able to do what he wants to do, what he thinks will win, even with a good staff. I think that it's a tall order, because you're going to be handcuffed with a bad farm system, and I guess after some trades, a mid farm system, and the inability to go after top free agents.
Well, I mean, that is the ultimate problem right there. The fact that you, as the White Sox, are owned by Jerry Reinsdorf, and Chris Getz might have a really good plan, but your budget's going to have to work within the constraints of Jerry Reinsdorf. That definitely is a challenge. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on Chris Getz to draft the right guys and develop the right guys.
I'm just saying, wouldn't an order, a middle of the order that has Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, and Shohei Ohtani, isn't that a little bit formidable?
I would say so.
You can afford Shohei Ohtani.
But they won't do it. Reinsdorf made that very clear. Said we're not going to do it. Flat out said it.
Yep. Also said that you're not going to sign a big name pitcher.
Oh, well, we don't like paying. We like paying David Eckstein.
Yeah, well, you know what? I hate to break the news to him, is a team with 8 starting David Ecksteins is not winning a World Series.
No.
There's a whole lot of guys on that team that you needed to win a World Series. David Eckstein he's like the extra. It's after you've got everybody else, you're like, let's get a David Eckstein in there. Now, I'm not shitting on David Eckstein. He was a glue player. You need those to win World Series. But you also need top-notch talent.
Exactly. But here's Jerry Reinsdorf, a man who under his ownership had the likes of Frank Thomas, Paul Konerko, Mark Burley, Jim Thome, Jose Abreu, in prime Lucas Giolito, Carlos Lee, Jermaine Dye, all these really good players. And yet you say your favorite player is David Eckstein.
Yep. Joke. Absolute joke. Let's wrap this up quickly. I know there's not a lot to talk about, but man, it was nice to see. Did you go to the game Connor Bedard played?
No, I ended up not going because I was kind of looking to see tickets going down, but they just kind of didn't, because I think a lot of people wanted to see Connor Bedard. So, it's like the cheapest tickets close to game time was like $60. So I'm like, okay, I'll just watch it on TV. But I watched and really enjoyed. And yeah, there was a lot of promise with that kid.
Absolutely. My friend went and he's like, I was like, how much did you spend? And he's like, $33 a ticket.
Oh, we got him that cheap. Huh.
He must have got him a while back.
Yeah, that could be. I also looked only at Ticketmaster, so, you know.
But it was great to watch him play, and I'm excited to see what he's able to do here. You know, he just looks really good. And I think I think I'm saying this very hesitantly and tentatively, but what if this team is sneaky good?
Well, I think that they're going to be very aggressive. They're going to give you a lot every night. It's just, you know, I as much as I want to believe that, and I think they will be fun to watch. there's just a lot of inexperience on that roster, and there's a lot of just, you know, I don't see them being sneaky good playoff wise, but I do see them being entertained.
I see with a good coaching staff, young talent, and some veteran guys, not good, like, oh man, this is a team that, you know, can win a Stanley Cup, but I'm talking about like a team that's respectable and can at least compete potentially for a bottom playoff spot. I think there's a pathway for that. But in order to do that, I think Connor Bedard's going to have to put up a phenomenal rookie season.
Yeah. And you know what? At times, I think there's going to be some growing pains. Not that he's going to be playing bad, but when you're an 18-year-old kid facing NHLers.
Well, we talked about, I mean, well, we didn't. But the other night, he had a sloppy pass that got picked off. And they asked him about that. They're like, you know, did you think that pass would work in the NHL? And he's like, honestly, that pass shouldn't work in the peewees. So you recognize when he made a mistake. I think he's going to quickly learn, you know.
Oh, I think so too. Yeah, he'll learn those things quickly.
He's so talented that just, you know, you got to let him go out there and try to see him to test everything he can do against grown-ass men. You know, he's done it at every level, and we've seen him go in and do some great things in preseason and make guys look silly and break their ankles by, you know, skating around them. You're like, let him go out there and do that. There's going to be days where, you know, look at Patrick Kane, how many times we were frustrated by him on in the shootout, where you were like, just shoot the damn puck. Don't try to do 800 tricks and then not get a shot off.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to live with that while he tried to do what he could do. I think there's going to be some level of that with Connor Bedard, but
sure, of course.
I think the juice is going to be so much worth the squeeze that we're not going to care.
Oh yeah. I mean, we know there's going to be little things, but the positives are going to outweigh the negatives.
Absolutely. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope. I think I've said my piece. Big exhale.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. How we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter /X, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. Until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down, I want to...